everybody. Welcome to the Canine Connection Podcast. Today, Lori and I are going to be talking about training plans. Having a training plan, keeping track of your training plan. I think most people, first and foremost, have to make a commitment to doing anything at all because most people are doing nothing. And I don't know how you guys do that because I've been doing this for a really long time and I still write notes all the time, and I write what I'm working on and I write what I need to work on. I write what I want to work on in that session. And I find that people are not doing that at all. And then I hear this, oh my gosh, if I had a dollar for every time I hear this. Well, I wrote down what I was going to do, and then I didn't read it. Mm-hmm. And then I didn't do it. Yeah. So, helpful to have a plan of where you're going to put your training plan and make sure you read it beforehand. But I think the first thing you have to have is an end picture. I think let's start with that, right? Because you need to know where you're going. And I think, well, I should backtrack even more. People should aim high. I find that if anything, people shoot low. Like they'll say, oh, I'm only going to get my whatever title, like a lower level title, or I'm not even sure if I'm going to compete. So, And they shoot low and then they train low. And more often than not, they kind of see that they like it, and that now they realize their foundation, there are a bunch of holes in their foundation. Mm-hmm. And I tell people shoot high, right? Because if you shoot high, worst case scenario, you won't achieve that goal, but you'll get a lot closer than you would have, and you're setting yourself up for developing really good foundations and really good habits that will serve you well with your next dog, or even with your next, if you decide to go to a different sport. The same concepts still apply. So you need to know where you're going. And so that means you have to have a picture of what you want everything to look like when you compete. So that means you either need to find a video of somebody that you say to yourself, when I first started in this sport, well, when I first started in field, I was lucky to train with some people that were extremely talented, and I watched their dogs work and I was like, oh my God, that's how I, now, mind you, they had high-powered field trial dogs, and I had this poor yellow lab from Breedlines. But I was like, that's how I want my dogs to look. Now, was that realistic? Not really. Did Duncan ever get close to that? No, he did not. But I established good foundations that were extremely valuable when I started with Tyler. And even back then, the guy that mentored me gave me tons of, that was really before YouTube was big, which shows how old I am. But there was tons of reading. Like he just was like, read everything you can. So I did, because the more information I had, the better off I was. And he said, back in those days, we had videos. Yeah, you took them and you shoved them into this machine and then it played on your TV. VHS things. And I would watch that so that I wasn't kind of operating in a vacuum. And it's the same with obedience. I remember when I started obedience, I was in this novice class and we were doing this thing in class. I had no idea what we were doing or why we were doing it. I'm just Forrest Gump. I do as I'm told. So they're like, go in between these gates, turn right, sit your dog, and then praise your dog and reward. I was like, all right, I don't know why we're doing this, but I did it. And then they're like, now do it going to the left. Well, we were doing ring entrances to setups. I had no freaking idea what we were doing or why. looking back, fast forward, I said to myself, oh, well, it would have been really helpful if someone would have explained to me, this is what we're doing and this is why we're doing this. And for me to see a picture of like the end picture of what a novice class looks like and all the pieces. And so why I'm even doing that. So now we have no excuse.
Right.
Because we have YouTube.
We have YouTube. And, you know, I think the struggle with people starting out because they like they don't when you say like you need to have an end picture, you know. And when I ask people who I'm working with who are just starting out, you know, like what do you want to, you know, what do you want to do, like what are your goals, like what are you thinking, and it, most often than not, it's I don't know, I'm not sure, I don't know, maybe get a CD on the dog. So like you said, there's got to be a little bit of a commitment made to what you want to do, because how do you plan for something that really isn't a concrete goal, or, you know what I mean? Like it's like somebody saying like, I might take that trip next year. Well, how do you plan for that? Right. It's the same concept. So you really do need to make some sort of short-term goal, even at best, right?
I think people do that because people are afraid of failure. And they
I think so too.
And then they feel pressure and people are uncomfortable with pressure. So they're like, right. Oh God, if I say I'm going to get my CD, that's serious. Like, what if I don't? Then I failed. And if I do, oh my God, like that means, you know, oh God, now there's pressure on me. But I think if people just kind of change how they look at it, it's just giving you a roadmap to where you're going. Doesn't matter, even if you don't quite get all the way there.
Yeah. I also think, too, like, there has to be a want factor in there. Like, you really, like, you have to want it. You know what I mean? Like, if you're kind of wishy-washy, well, I don't really know. Do I really care enough about it? Like, that's hard to plan too. Like, that's hard. If you don't have the want factor, then how are you motivated to set the goal, to make the plan? Does that make sense?
Yeah, I think sometimes, so I think people should have a big plan, right? Like the end game. Like for instance, I know when I get a dog, what I want it to look like when it's mm-hmm. fully trained. Mm-hmm. That's gonna take me like 7 years, right? So mm-hmm. now I have other goals in between, stepping stones, right? Because otherwise, like everybody's just gonna be like, oh my God, this is ridiculous. Like, why am I even doing this?
Well, right? You're facing like a mountain, you know, that's right. Really hard.
So I think you have to break it down. I encourage people, when people say to me, I don't know, I'm not sure, I'm very definitive. I'm like, you can absolutely do it. There is no question in my mind. And sometimes just hearing that mm-hmm. helps people, right? Because yeah. it looks really daunting. And I tell them, I'm like, look, shoot high. It doesn't matter if you get there or not, right? Just set the goal. Like you said, make a commitment to that goal. And then you have to remember, like, I think it's really important to have a why, right? So I don't care if you're not competitive and you don't want a high score. That's perfectly fine. Like, but why are you training? Are you training because you like to spend time with your dog? Awesome. That is the perfect why, right? So then the reason we set goals and a training plan is because we want to be fair to our dog. If we don't have that, we're not going to be fair to the dog because we're not going to be clear. Mm-hmm. So if you want to have a stronger relationship with your dog, great. Then that's a powerful why. That's why I do it, is because I'm fascinated by the whole communication thing, right? Because it's hard. Mm-hmm. And the better I am at it, the more I realize I'm not that good at it at all. And so I find that fascinating. So I like spending time with my dogs. I like the relationship I have with these dogs. Like, I remember my first dog I ever had, because I wasn't allowed to have pets as a kid. I loved that dog. I mean, in my mind at the time, there is no way I could possibly ever love a dog more. Like, I loved him, right? Well, but I never trained him because, I don't know, I didn't know. Next dog I trained, whole nother level, right? That I didn't even realize was possible because I trained the dog. And so now it brought our relationship to a whole nother level. So I think that's a really good why to have, right? That's why I set goals so that it guides my training. Otherwise, I'm just wandering aimlessly training. My training's not going to be good. And now my relationship's not going to be good because my dog's going to be frustrated.
Right. Right.
So people really need to tap into their why. Like, it is important to know why you're doing it.
You definitely need a why, for sure. And then you also need to, you know, once that, you know, if you're showing up for a lesson or a class, then there's something in you that definitely has motivated you to pursue it, right? Mm-hmm. So that why is there to begin with. It's just making that commitment and really honing in on, you know, what really is behind, what's driving you, right? Realizing what's driving you. And the training plan, like, to think about why make a training plan? Because you really do want your time spent to be effective, right? Right. So I am a planner by nature. Like, I'm pencil paper. I'm a list maker. Like, I need to write everything down. That's just who I am. I think that is a, I think that benefits me because I don't know, maybe just because it keeps me on track.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. You know, and you know, I kind of need to know, like, I don't know if I'm a wing it kind of girl. I guess I can say I'm a little wing it kind of girl, but I really do like a plan. I like to know what's coming up. I need to know. It helps me, I don't know, stay organized and on track. And like, my goal is to, like, whatever I'm going to set out to do, like, I want to do it right. I want to be efficient at it. I don't go in things half-ass, you know, I kind of go 100%. That's my nature. And that plan keeps me on track with that.
Well, and I think what I see in training is people tend to fall into two categories. One is they kind of get stuck at steps for too long, right? Mm-hmm. They're not pushing themselves enough. Right. And I think, again, that's a product of not having a plan and not tracking what you're doing. Mm-hmm. The other problem I have is, if I say to a student, well, how did you teach that? And they don't know. Well, because you weren't tracking it, like, you're not able to go back and help your dog.
Right.
Or plug in pieces you may have inadvertently missed because, like, you don't even remember what you did or you don't remember how long you've been doing something. Mm-hmm. And I think with a lot of people, a training plan, they're like, oh God, it's just one more thing to do. I think people just have to, first of all, everybody's different, right? So I still, to this day, like to write things by hand because when I am writing it, it's cementing it into my brain. So if I handwrite it, most of the time, I'll remember it without even having to look. I bring my notes with me, but I look at my notes and I'm just to confirm. But if I handwrite it, I remember it. If I type it, I need to look at my notes the next day. Like, it's weird. It's just a thing. So, but everybody's different. I'm like, you don't have to handwrite it. You could type it. You could put it into your phone. There are apps. You could use an app. You can use a notebook.
Yeah.
I have a student. She just posted it on Facebook. She did this whole thing with index cards. This whole kind of elaborate thing that totally, and she explained it and kind of explained. And she's like, and then I can take this index card and throw it out and then use this index card. So for her brain, that makes total sense. So I think that I don't ever tell people you have to do it this way or you have to do it that way. You have to do what's going to work for your brain. Like in college, I learned how my brain works, right? I'm a linear learner. I understand. And that's how I do my notes. Other people, if they looked at my notes, they would probably get a headache. And they're like, no, that doesn't make any sense to me whatsoever. So fine, do it a different way, right?
Right.
But you have to just, and it doesn't have to take a long time, but you somehow have to be tracking.
Right.
Like you have to see, if I'm trying to figure something out, well, I have to know what I tried and what didn't work. Otherwise, I'm just going in circles.
Right.
And sometimes, and I've done this, which is really, I get so annoyed at myself when I've done this, where I'll finally figure something out that works. And then 2 days go by and I don't look at my notes and I'm training and then I'm doing something I didn't even mean to do. I'm like, what the fuck am I doing? Right. I just spent all this time figuring out that X works. Why am I doing A, B, and C? Because I didn't write it down and I forgot.
Yeah, I need reminders. Yeah.
You know, so I figure something out. I at the end of my training session takes 2 minutes, write a quick note.
Yeah. And I think like that's a huge point to make is just having that, like, so, and I know this probably is the same for you, Petra, but like I'm constantly thinking about training. Like it's an obsession. Like I'm always analyzing. Even when I'm not even training, like my thought will always go back to stuff going on with my training. So there's always this running, almost like dialogue going on in my head, or analyzing on stuff I did or what I want to do. Like, I think, and that's not going to be everybody, because I think there is a little bit of a obsession OCD thing there. Mm-hmm. But, like, if I have a new student come to me for a private, the first thing they do when they come to me, regardless of anything, is I say, what do you want to do today? And there's times when that person looks at me and they go, oh, I don't really know. Mm-hmm. So right there, I explained to them, like, you need to somehow have a conscious thought of whether it's you want to say, I need my dog to pay attention to me, but something like a conscious thinking of what you want to be doing or where you want to be going or what you need to help with needs to be going on in your head. Because I think that's the biggest struggle people say to me about training plans is, well, I never know what to write down to do. And I feel like that's where that, you know, like you were just talking about, like, you need to put reminders in, or you need to put something down on paper or in your phone on, you know, even if it's a little something that you are, you're keeping track, or you're consciously thinking about what needs to be fixed, what I want to learn, what do I want to do? Because that's always going on with me where I'll be in the middle of making dinner and I'll like go back to like, you know, oh, that pivot really was weird today, blah, blah, blah. I wonder what, and then I'll go, oh, that's what I want to work on tomorrow. And I'll like run over and I'll just write it either in my training book. Sometimes that's not even there. And I'll just scratch it on the outside of an envelope so I remember. But that conscious thinking needs to be going on in your head so you can formulate something in sense of a little bit of a plan. You know what I'm talking about?
Yep. And then I think people just need to break it down, right? Yep. So like if you like, sometimes it's as simple as I write down all the exercises, right? So whatever sport you're in, like your dog needs to learn skills first, like basic skills, needs to learn the exercises, right? Like needs to learn the skill. So I write the skills down and then I'm like, okay, for like, if it's agility, it could be like contacts, weaves, jump drills or handling drills. It Rally, it's all the individual signs. Obedience, it's all the individual exercises. And then I break that into smaller pieces. What piece am I working on, or piece says am I working on with that exercise? So I write that down. So I know, okay, these are all the things I'm working on. Then, unlike most people, I actually focus on the things my dog's bad at.
The weak like spots.
Like if my dog, so when I have a puppy or a young dog, right, everything is just learning skills. That's all they're learning, is how to do the behaviors. So I look at each, you know, every single exercise, and I'm like, all right, which behaviors are, you know, which pieces are we working on for each exercise? And then I'm like, all right, my dog's pretty good with this, this, and this in terms of, like, you know, heading in the direction of what I want. But, oh, we're really behind on this one thing. So then that's what I'll focus on for a while to try to, like, catch it up, you know? And then I just keep assessing, like, every week or every few weeks, like, am I making progress? Am I headed in the right direction with all these little pieces, always heading towards, you know, heading towards the big picture, right? And so this way I can keep track of, am I making progress? So I tell my students, like, if you're working on a skill and you're teaching your dog something and, like, 2 or 3 weeks have gone by and you're not making any progress, that's a red flag. You need to note that. You need to be like, oh God, I've been working on this for like 2 or 3 weeks and I'm not getting anywhere. All right. I need to figure out why this isn't working. What do I need to do differently so I can make some progress, right? Because I think people lose track sometimes. And then the other, sometimes people are trying to solve a problem and they try something for like 2 days and like, oh, forget it, it's not working. Try a new thing for 2 days. No. You need to try it for a couple weeks.
Right.
And then evaluate. Is it working or is it not working? And then adjust your plan in accordance with whether or not it's working.
And that, you know, during that process, for people who don't, who aren't as experienced with knowing what that picture should look like, or they're unsure. So that's where, you know, you want to have somebody hopefully who could help you, whether it's an instructor or you can go watch a video, or there's so many online resources now that you can tap into to help you if you get stuck or if you're unsure of how to figure something out. That's like super important to do because, you know, there is, like, you can't really say anymore, well, I don't have anyone to help me or I'm not sure, because there is an enormous amount of resources out there for sure. Absolutely.
Tons of resources.
So, you know, I think what happens a lot is people get, you know, they feel like they're standing in front of that huge mountain and it's all an upward climb. Like, they don't know how to tackle all the little things that, in, you know, involved in training all this stuff, all the pieces, all that. They're like, oh my God. And then it comes down to, well, you know, how long do you train for a session then? Because I think a lot of people are like, I got to get it all in. I got to get all this in every day, you know? So that's, I think that's like because they feel like, I'm not going to progress if I don't do that, you know? You know, and I get questions all the time, like, well, how long do you train? And I said, well, it depends on what's going on. And we can get into that in a couple of minutes. But for average, like, I'm only spending like 15 to 30 minutes per dog a session. Like, that's max.
See.
Like, you know, and that's with breaks. Either they're in their crate or I'm playing with them in between. Like, so am I hitting every skill in the book? Hell no. Mm-hmm. Like, when you're doing open and utility, like, you got a lot of balls in the air with a seasoned dog that's showing in both those classes. And then if you're bringing up a young dog and you're training through utility, there's billions of pieces you're teaching at that time. There's no way in hell you're hitting all that in a training session. No way. So that's where the training plan comes into because then you can keep track, you know, and you're allowed to, then you can, and having, like, I had a student who actually charted, she broke every exercise down into pieces in this chart. Mm-hmm. She yep. laminated it, and it just helped her stay on track because she was feeling so overwhelmed with how to help herself, like, plan those training sessions. And that worked for her because she could look back and be like, oh, I haven't touched on this in like weeks. I need to, you know, give that a little time. So that was helpful.
Another thing that's a big problem, and it's getting worse just because of the way the world is, where everything's instant, is the whole thing that I don't care if you're like, I want to get to my goal as fast as possible, so I'm going to do every piece of every exercise every day. Guess what? You're not getting there any faster than I will, because your dog has a brain just like you do. And just like you can only process so much information at a time, your dog can only process so much information at a time. Right. So if I'm overwhelming my dog every session, my dog's not learning. My dog's just getting flooded. So now I'm really not going to make any progress. I'm just overwhelming my dog, right? So I always say, like, quality over quantity. Like, my training is has very good quality. Therefore, I don't need to train for long sessions. Right. And besides which, even Zesty, who's kind of like a working machine, like, he'll work even when he was young. I could see it on his face. He's like, let's do more. And I'm looking at his eyes and I'm like, dude, your brain is fried right now. Like, you can't take in any more information.
That's how Stormy is too.
So they'll fool you because they'll keep going. But, like, you have to be able to look at that dog and say, wait a minute. Like, after this point, it's just going to be diminishing returns. Like, it's just going to go downhill. So I have a rule where, like, if my dog does something correct 3 times in a row, I move on. So I either do something else or I up the ante and make it a little bit harder, right? Because people love to do the same thing, like, over and over and over. And I'm like, I've stood there and said to them, like, why are you doing another rep? I don't understand. And it's almost like they hear me say the words and they can't stop. Like, they keep going and they're like, well, I just want to do it. And I'm like, hello, that was a hint. Like,
right. I think it's like this self-gratifying thing.
It is.
Like, your dog nails it and you're like, let's do it again.
And I'm like, and some dogs a lot, like, Zesty is a perfect example. If he's trying to figure something out, and then he does it correctly once, my best bet is to let it go and move on.
Right.
Because almost guaranteed, if I go to do it another 1 to 2 times, he will make a mistake. And then after that mistake, the whole thing degrades. Right. If he does it right that one time, I let it go. And then I come back the next day and it's like, he's got it.
Yeah.
Right. Zaina's kind of the same way. Like, she hates repetition. So if she does an exercise perfectly, right, I reward her and we move on. Why am I going to do it again?
Right.
First of all, she's going to be like annoyed. Second of all, what's her reward for giving me a perfect rep? To do it again?
Right, exactly.
And then at some point, she's going to make a mistake. Well, I created that because I just kept going, like, I was being greedy. I should have just accepted that and then moved on. And now she'll have this great memory in her head, like, yeah, I tried really hard and I did it right. And she'll feel really good about it. But that is ridiculously hard for people. So I put this limit where I'm like, no more than 3. And if I get to know somebody's dog and I feel like they're better with 1 or 2 reps, I'm like, you are not allowed to do more than 1 or 2. Because I find that if people have like a really clear, hard line, it helps them control. Like, my students will say, look, I only did 3.
Yeah, right.
Right? Because I gave them a concrete number. Same with errors. Like my like the thing that makes me crazy is I'll be like, I'll watch somebody's dog go, make the mistake over and over. I'll go, how many mistakes did your dog just make? They always either have zero idea, or if I'm like, well, just take a guess, they always underestimate.
Right. Right.
Right. And so I'm like, if your dog makes two mistakes in a row, that's a red flag. Yeah. You need to change something. Two. Yeah. So all you need to do is count to two. One, two. Everybody can count to two. Count to two. So write it down. You know what I'm saying? Write those reminders down.
Right.
Write down. Oh, look, my dog did two. I changed it. And then you can track. Oh, look, my success ratio was higher. But if you're not keeping track, again, you just like do endless reps or endless mistakes and you don't even know because you're not even like tracking it.
Yeah.
You know, so you have to. So one thing I do tell people is like you should have a separate sheet of like things you learn that are like global concepts, right? Like one of my favorite ones is the definition of insanity, doing the same thing over and over, expecting a different result.
Right.
Right. So that should be like, you should read that every time. So if you catch yourself doing that after a while, you'll start to go, right.
Yeah.
I'm doing that thing again. Don't do that.
Right.
Or if my dog makes an error, tell my dog how to be right 100% of the time. Don't just say to the dog, you're wrong. Tell them how. So that's like a universal thing. So you should have those every time you learn something like that, you should have that on a separate sheet and you should be constantly reminding yourself of
that. And I write that stuff down all the time. Mm-hmm. Like it's super helpful for people to do that, you know, especially because we have habits. We all have habits, right? And when we're trying to break them or we're trying to change something, often if we're not thinking hard enough about it, we resort back to those habits. So I do, like, if I'm really trying to work on changing something or remembering something, I write that stuff on the top of my page, like for that training session, so I can refer back. And when I read those words, when I write those words, it goes into my head and stays there way better than if I didn't do that, you know? Mm-hmm. So that's super, super important.
Yeah, we all need constant reminders, right?
Yeah,
like we do. We need constant reminders. Otherwise, we forget. And we just, like you said, we revert to bad habits. And the only way we can establish good habits is by, you know, having these constant reminders. And you need to remind yourself, like, you need to take accountability because you're the one making the decision to do this with your dog. And if you're, you know, like, I love how people always hold their dogs accountable. Like, they're really good at holding their dogs accountable.
Yeah.
Like, he did that. Why, you know, I need to tell him not to do that. He did that. He did that. Like, or she did that, you know, or, well, he did that wrong. Okay. Before you start, like, getting hyper-focused on everything your dog's doing wrong, you need to look at yourself and hold yourself accountable and make sure you're doing your part to the best of your ability. Then and only then can you start to think about holding your dog accountable, because otherwise it's just completely not fair.
Right. Right.
But yeah. So I start with little skills. So I track those. And as each thing is progressing, then at some point separately, you know, my dog needs to learn engagement. My dog needs to learn to work around distractions, which is a separate thing. Pressure, which is a separate thing. And chaining, which is a separate thing.
Yeah.
And I can't teach my dogs all those things necessarily at the same time. And I know that each of those things is going to take a while. So I'll have those as separate categories. And some days, maybe I'm just working on distractions, right? And then I'm not as concerned about the skills per se. I'm more concerned about, you know, helping my dog be successful working around distractions, or helping my dog be successful working when under pressure,
right,
or chaining or whatever the thing is that, you know, the dog needs to work on.
Yeah. And that's, you know, that's the, like a big part of the planning process when you are creating your training plan. You know, I tend to look at my, you know, that's a big, I think this is like the struggle is like, they're like, well, I don't know what to work on every day. Some of what I do depends on other things. Like what does my week look like? Like if you work, what's your work week look like? Like when are you going to be able to train? Where are you going to be training? Who are you going to be training with? Like these are things that definitely are factored into your training sessions. You know, there's days where like, so, and those are, I plan my sessions around that, right? So if I'm training, if I have a day where I'm like just busy with whatever's going on, work or life stuff, and I know I'm going to be kind of up against the clock a little bit, then I will say, you know what, this day we're going to just be in the house and we're going to do mini sessions of just skill stuff, you know, whether it's in my kitchen or in my bedroom. Those are just as powerful and just as important as going and renting a place for an hour and training. Like those little mini sessions, because those are, I'm honing in on just little skills, fronts, pivots, working on the actual stand for your stand for exam. Like those are just the breakdown skill pieces that, you know, I'll work on. If I am traveling out to go see Petra, I'm like, great, I have a training partner. We're definitely doing pressure. We're definitely working distractions. I'm going to utilize the person I'm with to tackle those things that I need to work on. Like you just said, like listing all the things, right? Because when you train alone, it's really hard to have that stuff, you know, pressure from a judge. Outside, like I like to train outside a lot if the weather permits. I had a student who's very new with a very new dog. They are just starting, you know, starting out. And he came to me after like a couple weeks and he said, well, I didn't have such a great training session the other day. And I'm like, oh, what happened? Well, I decided to go train outside at the park. And I'm like, oh boy.
Right there. Not a good idea.
Because like, that's gotta be put into like, you know, you have to be realistic. So a very green dog who doesn't have the skill set yet or the handler working on attention or engagement, you know, and then you decide to take that dog and you're going to go to the park and try to do some stuff, like, well, that's going to go fucking south really fast.
Yeah, and that's not going to go well.
Right? So you have to be realistic on where your dog is in your training, whether it's a seasoned dog, whether it's a dog, a puppy, or it's got to be optimum for them in that learning environment.
Well, and if you keep notes, then you can actually, like early on, it's hard, but I do this thing in my classes now, most of my classes, where I have this thing called What Would Petra Say, right? Because so when you submit your homework to me, right, with your questions and whatever, absolutely ask me whatever you want to ask me. But I want you to also just take a wild guess at what I would say. You could be completely wrong. That's perfectly fine. No one's judging, right? But it's going to start putting your brain in the space of trying to figure it out and trying to solve the problem versus just being dependent. Uh-huh. And just saying, tell me what to do. Tell me what to do. Uh-huh. So if I were this man and I took notes, I could look at my notes and say, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, I trained in my house and the session went really well. Thursday, I went to a park. It was a disaster. Something happened at the park that made my training. Okay, so now you're starting to think, you may not have enough experience to know why training at the park didn't go well or what happened. But you can start even from that early on to be a diagnostician. Because really, at the end of the day, that's why training is hard. Because it's constantly fluid. It constantly changes. It's not straightforward. There's not one path. And we have to constantly make these adjustments. And people get stuck when they have to make adjustments, right? And then they flounder and they panic. So having a plan means you can go look at your notes and maybe you're going to start to see pictures. You're going to start to see patterns. And if you start to say to yourself, like, think, like I always say, think like a detective. Like, don't be emotional, like, because everybody gets emotional. Like, oh, God, the training session was terrible. Okay. Get that out of your system. Now, like, just be a detective, right? What went wrong? Why do you think it went wrong? How come it didn't go wrong yesterday or the day before? Right. And so if you're kind of keeping track, that will give you valuable information, right? Like, well, this happened that day, but not this day. Oh, maybe that played a role. And again, even if initially early on you can't solve the problem, it's going to help you to start thinking that way, to start seeing patterns. And as time goes on, you're going to get better and better at figuring it out. And even at towards the end of a 6-week class, students will, when they start guessing what I would say, their guesses are getting more and more and more accurate, closer and closer and closer to what I'm actually going to say.
Right.
Right. And now, and that's important because I don't live with you people. I'm not, you're not training with me every day.
Right.
So what happens when I'm not there? You have to be able to make these decisions. Well, how are you going to make them, right? Well, you're going to start learning by being objective and by looking at the data. If you have no data, you can't track the data, right? Yeah. If you have no information, you can't go, oh, God, you know, you can't see any patterns. So you have to have something written down somewhere.
Yeah, and keep track of it. For sure.
And keep track and look back at it, right? Because, and then, and like, and the other thing with having a plan is, the other thing where people go awry is, it's good to know where, I know where I'm going. I know what my end picture is. I have absolutely, positively no idea how long it's going to take me to get there. None. Exactly. Zero. I can't tell you how many times I've entered trials because we have to enter like a few months ahead thinking, oh, I think my dog will be ready. Nope, pulled from the trial, right? Because I cannot predict how my dog is going to learn.
Right.
Or how well or not well I'm going to be, you know, I'm going to do with teaching it to my dog.
Right.
So I think people get really stuck on wanting to get to the end as quickly as possible. And then they get frustrated and overwhelmed because there's so many pieces. I mean, if I sat there when I had a 8-week-old puppy and thought about all the, I know at this point in my career, every minute detail of information my dog's going to have to know.
Yep.
Including distractions, pressure, everything. I already know that. Well, if I sit there and think about all of that, my head will explode and I'll never even get started because it's overwhelming.
It is overwhelming.
There's just too much. So I just look at it like I constantly remind myself, like, progress. Like, that's it. I'm just looking to make a little bit of progress, a little bit of progress. And I know some days I'll get stuck. And I won't make any. And that's okay. That's just part of the journey. And then I'm always looking at progress. And that's super important because people don't like, this is my, like 90% of my homework is like, this went bad. This was terrible. This isn't what, you know, and I get it. I'm there to help you. But people don't focus on, I'll be like, oh my God, that's so much better. And they'll be like, it is. Because they're not tracking the good things.
Right, right.
you know,
so, yeah,
yeah, perfect. Like you yeah, have to the, also look at that.
You do. Yeah. That end goal can be, it can be a little detrimental if your focus is on that. That's a big thing. Like with, you know, I hear this sometimes, it drives me, it just drives me crazy is, you know, I just want to be able to get my CD at my national this year. Well, that's a, yeah.
Who knows?
Who knows if that's going to happen? I mean, you know, that's a, it's such a process. And yes, we're planning and tracking, but there's going to be roadblocks and there's going to be times where like it's going to take longer because it didn't go. It didn't, that particular method isn't working for that dog. And you need to spend more time either figuring it out or trying something different or whatever. You know, the same goes with, you know, especially as like my young dogs start becoming a little bit more fluent in some of these exercises, I start getting, oh God, she looks so good. When are you going to put her in the ring?
Mm-hmm.
I have no idea. Not anytime soon. You know, that's a thing. Like, I'm not going to be like, well, my goal is to put her in. You know, that will come down the road as I get closer and closer. But I am always okay with being like, nope, not ready yet. Scratch. Like, totally fine with that.
Yeah. Well, and life things happen to us.
Yeah.
And then people kind of let it out on the dog because like they, something happened in their life that kind of put, which happens, right? Training on the back burner. Now they come back and they're like, oh God, I'm behind. Yeah. And they're putting too much pressure on the dog, trying to rush through things because they're like, oh, I have to catch up. Or, oh, you know, I had this goal to go to my national. Now I'm behind or whatever. It's like, it is what it is. Like, they're just going to get there when they get there. And if you're trying to push them too fast, all you're going to do is make your dog nervous and worried.
Yeah.
And it's never, ever going to go well. Believe me, I've been there. I've done it. It never goes well.
It doesn't go well. No. And it's really hard once that those feelings start to creep in on your dog. Associating that, and you know, when if you're, you know, if you're putting your dog in too early because you're wanting to reach that goal before they're ready, just be very careful because that could be really detrimental to them. It's just hard to get that back.
And you have to ask yourself, like, what is your goal really? Like, what are you accomplishing by putting, entering your, showing your dog at the national if your dog's not ready and they're not going to do well? What's the point?
Right.
And by well, I don't mean high and trial. I mean, accomplish whatever goal you want. Qualifying could be qualifying, right? If your dog's not ready, they're not going to qualify. So what are you what are you achieving? Like, you know, like, why do you even have that goal? You're going to your national and you want to be able to enter your dog, well, go to your national and just enjoy yourself. Don't enter your dog because it's the all you're going to do is stress your dog out. It's like me saying to a new student, like, okay, I'm going to have you stand in front of everybody and explain how to do this. They're going to have a stroke. They're like, but I don't even know how to do it. And I'm like, well, you're going to do it anyway. You're going to be sick for a week. You're not like, it's going to be horrible. You're
right.
Going to have a terrible experience, right?
Right.
What's the point? What am I achieving? Like nothing. A dog is the same. All they're going to do is go. They're going to be completely over face.
Yeah.
And they're going to associate the ring with negative feelings, with negative, you know, I don't have any help. I don't know what to do. So I get confused when people get very fixated because I'm like, I don't understand.
Well, people have, we've talked about this. People have a hard time when they make their list or they set their goal. They're like, no matter what, we're going to get to the end and do that thing that we set out to do. you know, it's the same thing. Like, we can go back to even like when you make your training plan, right? And you say, I'm going to work on X, Y, and Z today. And X falls apart. And they're like, all right, well, that's good enough, because we still got to do Y and we still got to do Z. And where is this going? Like, what is this benefiting your dog? Like, absolutely nothing, because you can't get to Y. You can't get to the end. You're not there yet. So be okay with that. It's really hard. Like, it's a human trait, I think.
Yeah. And you have to be flexible. I remember the very first time I kind of understood the concept. I remember this so clearly, probably because it was the day it was like an epiphany I had, right? So Tyler, so this is going back a really long time. And my plan was to work on left turns, right? So in front of my house, which was still like, typically I train in the back, so the front was still a little more challenging. So anyway, that's my plan. I'm going to set him up. We're going to do forward, left turn. And I go to set him up, and the setup was awful. Like, it just, I don't remember if he was distracted, or all I remember is the setup was really awful, and I felt this urge to just keep going because I was going to do left turns. And I went, oh, this is where you get yourself in trouble, right? Forget the left turn. I need to fix this setup situation. Mm-hmm. And however long that takes. Now, maybe I'll fix it in 3 reps and then I can still do my left turns, but maybe not. It doesn't matter anymore at that point, because now I have to fix this. And that's where training plans always have to be flexible. Mm-hmm. Like, I have a plan, but within that plan, there's always flexibility, because again,
yeah,
I'm dealing with a living, breathing, feeling creature. Maybe my dog has a stomach ache that day. Maybe my dog's out to lunch that day. Maybe I think I'm being clear, but I'm being totally confusing that day. And so when it's not going right, I have to go, okay, hold on. Let's figure this out right now. And then we'll worry about everything else later. And if I get to it, I get to it. And if I don't get to it, I'll get to it another day.
Yeah.
Right.
And your environment can change on you. Like, yes, you need to be real like that in a heartbeat. I mean, you know, I was actually training outside this morning and I had Stormy. We were doing some setups and some beginning pieces of some healing, and everything was great until the business next door was using some tool. I don't know what it was. It sounded like fireworks going off, and she, like, all of a sudden, like, that changed everything in an instant, and she struggled with being able to give me full attention and engagement. So I had to go back and be flexible and adapt to that, because my environment changed. That can happen anywhere you're going. Mm-hmm. So you need to be okay. There's got to be an adaptability factor put into your training, for sure.
And I think if people keep track, then even when they muck it up, right? Like, so for example, some people, when they first start training, it's hard for them to recognize these things in the moment and make those adjustments.
Right.
But if they're paying attention and taking notes, and then they start to go, oh, shoot. Yeah, I see what I did wrong. Look at that. Like, I was trying to heal this poor dog, and this poor dog was like, oh God, the noise, or whatever the case. And so even if you see it after the fact, that's great, because that's good information, because now you're going to become aware, and maybe next time or maybe the time after that, you'll start recognizing it like in real time, right? But again, I think the main thing is you're just looking to make some progress within your training session. Yes, you know where you're going, big picture. Maybe you have a short-term goal, but I never incorporate concrete time factors into those goals because it's always fluid and changing. Yeah. So I will never say by X date, I want my dog to be ready for whatever, because I don't know what's going to happen. And that causes bad training. But in my training, if I'm like, well, I made progress. Well, it didn't go where I wanted today, but at least I got to work on that. Right. So yeah, you didn't get to do Stormy's healing, but you had a great opportunity to do some distraction work.
Right.
And that's how people should look at it. Like, okay, instead of saying, well, I didn't get to do my left turns. I'm like, no, but I got to work on this other thing.
Right.
And that's still progress. Right. I'm still headed in the correct direction.
And people, like, I think that's the other thing too I want to touch on is, like, people get so annoyed when things happen during their training sessions that affect what's going on with your dog. Like, you know, you're training your dog and the door opens and somebody walks in the middle of you trying to do something, and then the dog looks away. Ugh. What, that person walked in like it was the person's fault. And I'm like, hello, there's your trial.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like, right.
Opportunity. Yeah.
Yeah. Excited. Like, so don't, you know, these are the moments where you need to, like, kind of embrace them and be like, okay, well, I'm okay with not being able to go down the list and continue on with what I was in that moment wanting to do, because this happened. So this is a great training opportunity because I know my dog is going to have to deal with that. They're going to have to face that down the road in their career. So, yeah, so you need to keep that in mind.
Right. And
well,
then I would add that to my list so that, yep, anytime I have an opportunity that someone's around, I can be like, hey, can you stand outside and then come in and then go back out and come in and out?
Yep.
Or,
yep,
put myself in a situation where that's going to happen. So I add that to my list as something that I need to work on when I have the opportunity, which kind of goes with what you said, right? Like Thursday, I'm going to train with two people. So then I'll be able to do certain things because I'll be able to utilize them.
Right.
Tomorrow I'm going to be by myself, so I'm going to have to do something different. And so, yeah, so you have to say, when I have access to a person, okay, I need to add this to my list of things to do and take advantage of, you know, that's,
right,
it's an opportunity and it's good information. And it, again, it's just, it's the whole process thing. It's just being happy with progress.
Right.
Like, it's so interesting. So, I take my niece climbing, indoor rock climbing, and there are two sections, and the one section is bouldering. So you're not in a harness, and it's not as high, but fairly high, and you lose your grip, you fall, right? It's just, mm-hmm, these mats. It's mostly younger people, right? So I would say the average age probably in their 20s, right? Maybe early 30s, but probably 20s. And I'm like, this is like the best thing ever. So I watch them, and this is what happens. So they're in patterns, right? And in levels of what's hard. So you pick a color at a difficulty you think maybe you can manage or not. Well, most of them you can't. So they start and then they fall. Then they try again. Yeah, they fall again. All they fucking do is fall. That's all they're doing. They climb, they fall. They climb, they fall. They try again. They try a different way. They try a different path. They try a different handhold. They fall, they fall. A lot of times, they never get to the top, right? And they're having a good time because they just keep trying. And maybe they just get an extra handhold or two further. And they're happy with that because that's progress.
Right.
Right. And that's what, like, my niece will do. Like, she'll try, she'll fall. She'll try, she'll fall. She'll try, she'll get two handholds further, she'll fall. Progress. We lose that as adults. Like, I don't know what happens, but people are like, I want it to happen now. They have like no patience.
Instant gratification.
No tolerance for, you know, baby steps, baby steps. They have no tolerance for failure. They have no tolerance for things going awry. Like they lose the whole try and try again. Just try and try. Just come back. Try and try again. Because really, that's the key to success in anything.
Right.
Is just keep trying and failing and trying and failing and trying. And then going, ooh, I got a little bit better. I got a little bit better. Well, today I didn't make any progress, but you know what? I'm still here. I still did it. And that's still going to, in the long term, cumulatively, it's going to lead to progress.
Right.
And that's what people need to focus on, especially with dog training, right? Like that you made incremental progress and that your dog made incremental progress. Right. And that's the whole name of the game, right? Is just baby steps. So I emphasize, like, it's really easy to focus on all the mistakes your dog made, all the things that didn't go well, all the things your dog still has to learn. Mm-hmm. But you also need to focus on what your dog is learning, what your dog has learned, the progress your dog is making.
Mm-hmm. Definitely. And
sometimes, like, it's so important, like, and then you have to sometimes put yourself around either the general public in some way, shape, or form. Because, like, I have a boarding kennel, and, like, when those dogs come in the building, it's like they're feral. And then we're sitting there like, ugh. My dog's fronts aren't perfect.
Right.
It's like, get a grip. Like, that, your dog is amazing. Like, when amazing. I'm out in public with my dogs, never mind training them, like, people are in absolute awe. Like, they can't even process that my dog is just sitting there and looking at me, never mind doing anything at all.
Oh,
they're how do you do that? Like, how do you get...
And they all say the same thing. They're like, I can't get my dog to even look at me.
They can't. Like, when dogs would come in for pet training, Riley was my trainer. And, like, I initially, like, I taught her. I helped her, right? So she gets this dog, and so it's one of the first dogs, and she spends like 10, 15 minutes with the dog, and she looks at me and she goes, I need your help. I go, what is it? She goes, I don't know, but I don't even think this dog knows its name. And she's right. Dog didn't know its name at all. Like, you could say, you know, Zest, 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 and you may as well be saying tree, branch, butterfly, leaf, and the dog's like zero response, like does not, and that's very common. Dogs will come in for pet training, didn't even respond to their name, right? So she'd look at me like, well, how do I train? I'm like, well, first you have to teach the dog attention.
Right, right.
Like,
right.
These are not my dogs. These are like the average dog, and nothing against those people. Like, this is just, they're not trainers, right?
Right.
So you have to, again, like, maintain perspective. Your dog's doing pretty darn good.
Right.
You're doing really well. And kudos to you for even putting in the effort.
Yeah.
To want to do this with your
dog. Right.
So, yeah. Don't just write down what didn't go well. Also, know what is going well, because if something is going well, why? What did I do? Right. Let me do that with other pieces of other exercises, right? So that's just as important as figuring out what you should not be doing.
Exactly.
So just do something, whatever it is.
And write it down.
Write it down on your phone. Find an app. Yeah. Use the iPad with the pencil.
Yep.
Use the old-fashioned pen and paper. Use index cards. Use whatever works for your specific brain.
Yeah.
And And your training will be way more efficient, and you'll make way more progress than if you're just lying by the seat of
your pants. Okay, right. Good. Hope that helps.
Hope that helps, guys. Write it down.
Yeah.
All right. Bye. Thanks. Happy training.
Bye.
Thanks.